Good afternoon, everybody. Welcome back to The Doubters on Thursday, the 20th of August. And a big welcome today to Dan Furlong, who's joining us. Hi, Dan.
Hey, how are you, Olivia?
I forgot to ask where you are, actually. You are in the country. You're in London, are you?
Essex, yeah.
Essex. Proper Essex boy, eh?
Yeah. I've been around a bit, but yeah.
Been around a bit. You're in Essex now. My husband's from Essex, so it's a good place to be from.
Okay, cool.
Oh, I always get confused. He grew up, I don't know. I should know.
Yeah.
I always get confused. I don't really know Essex very well. Anyway, so yeah, this is The Doubters. This is my private online community. And this is a space where I explore all the ideas related to this concept about the purpose of self-doubt that I've been exploring for a couple of years now. And as you can see, we've got a guest today. Sometimes I kick this off on my own, but it's just really an explorative space. We've got a topic. The topic today is about a male perspective of self-doubt. We've got Dan along to talk about that. So we'll get onto that in a minute. But just to say, we've got a couple of people joined us here live today, and other people may come and go as we go along. I always love to see people come along live. There's never any pressure to contribute. I love it when people come and I love it when people contribute. You're always really welcome, but I don't pressure people to contribute because sometimes we can, you know, it can be quite a sensitive subject for people. So you're really welcome just to come along and hang out and hopefully spend a bit of time here and just get some inspiration and feel, you know, some good conversation. That's what it's about, really. Yeah. So what else do I need to say? No, that's it. Right. Let me just introduce Dan. So Dan Furlong is, I like to introduce people through my connection with them, actually. And my connection with you is actually you were recommended to me by somebody in the community, Ellie, who's not here today because she went and got a job.
Oh,
how inconvenient.
Okay. That's good.
Yeah, good for you, Ellie. So shout out to Ellie there. And thanks for introducing me to Dan. But she'd heard you on a webinar, something. She said, "Oh, I think Dan sounded like it'd be really good for you to talk to." So that I got in contact with you, and you know,
maybe it was the Bloom event. I did an event for an agency that supports, I think it's female entrepreneurs or female digital marketers, called Bloom,
and
I think it was that event. Yeah,
yeah. Yeah, I think she was quite impressed at your capacity to be vulnerable in a room full of women.
Yeah, it was literally 99% female, that call.
Yeah. So no pressure today. Yeah, so she connected us, looked you up. Obviously there is a resonance with the work we're doing, and we're talking about this male perspective on self-doubt. And you know, dare I say it, you could be the perfect man to talk about self-doubt. Just one man's perspective, obviously. We've got a couple of other men here listening in. But, you know, but you have overcome a 20-year struggle with OCD, which is known as the doubter's disease. We'll hear about that, and addiction. And that now you're really committed to sharing your story. You're helping young people, and you run a brand called Male Anxiety Depression on Instagram. So
that's correct, yeah.
Yeah, good. So is there anything that you want to say by way of introduction that you think people should know about you?
Yeah, no, like you did a good summary there. Yeah, I had I had a 20-year struggle with obsessive compulsive disorder. And yeah, you're right. Before they started calling it, well, before they switched to calling it OCD, they used to call it the doubter's disease or the doubter's disorder. And we can talk about that a little bit more further on. But yeah, I had a 20-year battle with it. I first started getting intrusive thoughts around 10 years old, and I didn't get diagnosed till I was 30. And living with OCD is kind of like having a horrible monster live in your head, and instead of paying you rent, this horrible monster feeds you all kinds of horrible unwanted intrusive thoughts, and life becomes debilitating really, really fast. So I lived in a space which I call suicide limbo, which is a space where I didn't want to live from as early as 11 years old. I didn't want to live because of the nature and burden of my intrusive thoughts or my monster as such. But I didn't want to die either, because I had a beautiful, loving family. I loved my sport. And you always have this notion when you struggle with obsessive compulsive disorder, you know that these intrusive thoughts are not you and don't represent you, thing, but you can't get rid of them. But there's always that little bit inside your brain which says, like, one day you're going to be able to beat this. Mm-hmm. So to cut a long story short, obviously a lot of depression in there as well, and I started to medicate with alcohol at 15 and then medicated with class A drugs at 18. So I'd also had a 15-year battle with alcohol and addiction as well. So but yeah, right now I'm 7 years clean and sober now. I'm
well done.
Probably say that I'm about 5 years into my OCD recovery. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I just spend my time now trying to build my emotional fitness and helping others do the same thing. Yeah, roller coaster of a ride. I've launched a brand called Mal Anxiety Depression, and we're just going to be kicking off a program very shortly called the Brain Upgrade Challenge, which is a lifestyle intervention program for guys. So everything I do is completely holistic. I didn't go down the pharmaceutical route, and I've put together, yeah, this program, which is basically just kicks the guys' butts into action and helps them get out of that that trap that they're in. Yeah, and apart from that, I've done a couple of big ultra runs to raise money and awareness for mental health, and yeah, pretty much. And I work now also work for social services as well, so I'm helping young people with their emotional fitness as well. Yeah.
That's fantastic. It sounds like you really made a way of life out of recovery and getting over this stuff, which is fantastic. It's really great to hear, Dan. Credit to you for that.
I had to get clean and sober first, and I always make this clear that if you're struggling with any kind of mood disorder or anxiety disorder or anything really, you've literally got no chance of putting it right if you've got a problem with alcohol and drugs.
Yeah.
So very much had to get that sorted out first before I was even able to start contemplating getting help for my anxiety disorder. So I got clean and sober first, and that was kind of the catalyst into turning my life around, really.
Yeah, just to say I 100% support that statement, because as I've shared on here before, I'm also in recovery.
Oh, cool.
So yeah, I got sober in 1999.
Oh wow, congratulations.
Yeah, going back a bit, but yeah, it was the start of everything. That, you know, it's just not possible for any other growth whilst I was dependent upon substances, essentially. Yeah. It had to come first.
My life could be sort of, if you sum it up, as like one big vicious circle, you know. So OCD is a vicious circle, just as such as alcohol and a problem with addiction or alcoholism is a vicious circle as well.
Absolutely. Yeah. And there's no way out of that. Unless you put that first.
Absolutely.
So you said so many things there just in your little introduction that I'd love to pick up on.
Cool.
About the nature of the doubt that you're experiencing, but let me just give a little background as to why I'm particularly interested in this topic about a male perspective of self-doubt, because I've been researching self-doubt, if you like, for 2.5 years now, and I've developed a model for giving self-doubt a purpose. So it's a real keen interest of mine, and self-doubt has been my lifelong companion. That's where it starts from. Yeah. And so while I was researching this, I was looking at obviously what's already out there, and I came across a lot of the literature that I came across was directed towards women, and there seems to be a really strong narrative out there that women doubt themselves and men don't doubt themselves. And I don't really believe that. I don't believe that because I'm the youngest of six. I grew up with five older brothers. So I have, you know, I grew up around men. I had a huge male influence in my life growing up. And I saw how men had a capacity for emotion. Mm. And I saw that, you know, I believe that you know, men did doubt themselves. Men did suffer from emotional anxiety and challenges. And so I guess, so I think my question is really is about, is there a difference and what might be the difference between men and women? So obviously it's just interesting just to explore that angle around self-doubt. But, you know, as I said, essentially it's really breaking down that narrative that men don't doubt themselves, because, you know, that's really strong out there. I mean, is that something that you've come up against?
Yeah, so you said some interesting things there. So in my experience, and I'm always talking about this, whatever goes on for women goes on for men as well.
Yeah.
So in the past, I've spoken about things like body image, that obviously you associate someone who's got problems with body image as with women. That's what the narrative says. That's what society said. But guys look in the mirror exactly the same way as women look in the mirror. And it's like the same deal here, I think. And, you know, I spend all of my time trying to not to use the term mental health, because I think mental health carries its own stigma. Mm. And then you've got this idea
when they're talking about mental health, what they're talking about is ill health or sickness, really, aren't they? They're not really talking about health.
Yeah, and I think when you hear the terms mental health, you think straight away, you think of words like crazy, loopy, weak. There's a lot of negative. And then you've also got, you hear like businesses throw it around a lot on commercials and stuff, like 1 in 4 people will experience a mental health issue. And I'm like, what, really? Like 4 out of 4 people will experience one, you know, because we're human beings.
Yeah.
It's part of our, it's part
human
of our
condition. Yeah.
Part of our life, you know. We've all got a brain, we've all got a heart, we've all got a gut, we've all got jobs, we've all got families, you know, all of these things come into it. So I spend my time trying to talk about emotional fitness, because it makes it more tangible for guys, especially, to get their head around it. Mm. Just the same way that you go to the gym to work on your physical fitness, you have to do the things that, like, I promote and suggest to build your emotional fitness, and everybody can do that. But for sure, like, you've been studying this for 2.5 years. What sort of things are, like, for women, what sort of things come up with this? Because I guarantee you it's probably pretty similar for guys.
Yeah, yeah. Well, the interesting thing was to start with is that I recruited some coaching case study clients just to explore self-doubt. Mm. And I recruited 3 women. I couldn't get any men to do that initial coaching with me. And I had a number of conversations with men. But it didn't actually translate into going into the coaching. So I had to go with what I had. And so that sort of made me start to question, I wonder what's going on there. Maybe it was that, you know, men needed to trust what I was offering a little bit more, because the women, I was just saying, we're just going to look at self-doubt and I don't know what's going to come out, essentially. So maybe it was like men were like, oh, okay, that might be a bit suspicious. I didn't know. Anyway, you can't really generalize, can you? But what were women coming up with? So when we do the self-doubt coaching, I ask people to identify an area where self-doubt is showing up in their lives. And they do that. And I ask it in a practical level. So it could be things like, well, my leadership position at work, or being a mum, or family, yeah, or relationships is something that comes up a lot. A lot of women talk about feeling like they need permission. Which is interesting, because I feel that permission is related to power, giving power away and stuff like that. And so it's things like that. But, you know, see, what happens is that as we explore self-doubt, it gets underneath that, and it all comes down to this, the kind of, there's an area where they feel that they're not good enough.
Yeah.
Kind of holding back, they're feeling that they're not good enough. So self-doubt links to something we want to do, essentially.
Yes.
It links to, you know, being driven to do something. Often, and so there's a part of us that feels we're not good enough, and that's essentially what self-doubt is.
Yeah. And that is absolutely, like, speaking on behalf of guys, and I think I can do it, guys experience everything that you mentioned there. I think it's just different, because the reason it's not guys don't talk about this stuff.
Well, this is one of my observations or questions, I guess, around it, is that I wonder if there's a difference in around expectation, because in a way, women are allowed to doubt themselves, and we're allowed to show our emotions. As you know, we're expected to doubt ourselves, but men are expected not to doubt themselves. So yeah. I wonder if that adds an extra layer of expectation and challenge, actually, is that, you know, if men are doubting themselves, actually, well, I'm really not supposed to be like this. I'm meant to be strong and macho and all that kind of stuff. Yeah, that still go on, doesn't it?
Yeah, the James Bond stereotype, isn't it?
It's
supposed to grow. You're brought up to be this guy who can conquer the world, do nothing wrong, show no weakness.
Did you feel that? Did you experience that?
Not so much in terms of, I mean, for me, it was just, obviously, we mentioned before about OCD used to be called the doubter's disorder. Mm. And the reason that it's called the doubter's disorder was because it makes you question who you are as a person. Mm. That's the whole nature, the intrusive thoughts are around horrible fears that come into your head, and then from that fear comes that what if question. What if I'm like that? What if these thoughts mean something? What if I'm going to suddenly act upon these thoughts? All of these types of things. And OCD only seems to affect people who have got really, really strong morals, who are really empathetic, so they're really loving fear. They've got all of these high standards. And then these intrusive thoughts conflict with that. And because they don't know why they're having these intrusive thoughts, and they've got no idea that these intrusive thoughts are just intrusive thoughts, you can't stop them. They start to attach meaning to the thoughts, and that's when it really, really starts to attack your character. And it's, it's a thing. So, like for me, all of my memories of growing up are just obviously about living life with OCD. But I have spoken to a lot of guys now through my work with male anxiety depression. And sometimes I'm the first person they've ever spoken to about their emotions and what's going on. We have that thing with guys, and I was guilty of this as well. It's like, I grew up in a rugby club, 15 other lads playing rugby with me, and they would always ask me how I am. And I would say, I'm fine, mate. Every single time, without fail, bang, 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 I'm fine, mate.
Fucked up, insecure, neurotic and emotional.
Yeah, right, yeah. Or feelings inside, not expressed.
Oh, that's a better way of putting it. Excuse my language.
Definitely the fucked up comes into it, for sure, yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
And it's going to take a long, long time before we're able to reprogram the lads to actually talk about their emotions and not be ashamed of things that they're struggling with.
Yeah. And see, and it's interesting as you talk about that, because that's actually a female thing as well, very much, very much a female thing. I experienced that for a long time. And I guess, you know, I had quite a lot of masculine influence in my life. So my way of coping was to adopt a very masculine approach, which was don't show your emotions. And I did that very well for a really long time. And obviously alcohol and everything else fueled that. But I don't think that's, you know, just, I see that a lot actually in society, is that women, you know, have as much challenge expressing themselves as men do, like that, you know, that fine, and it's not okay to show that I'm not okay, you know, all that kind of stuff, which I think is, when we talk about, you know, male and female, sort of masculine and feminine, I guess is probably more interesting. And, you know, women can be just as masculine. And in fact, you know, I've been around groups of women and have been far more laddish than any group of men that I've ever been around. I don't know, it's just because men have been around, there's a woman there, but, you know, been around groups of women and it's like, hang on,
what are you talking about?
You know, so that might be sort of more interesting as a concept, is the masculine and the feminine, and and how we all carry those traits.
Yeah, for sure. I think, yeah, it comes down to we're both, like, we're human beings, aren't we?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
But yeah, for guys, I know that guys struggle with lack of confidence. They feel incapable to do things. The am I a fraud question comes up a lot.
What is it?
The imposter syndrome. And I can sometimes struggle with that as well, with like my male anxiety depression account and stuff like that. I can doubt myself whether my posts are making a difference, whether I'm really a voice in the space, whether I should just give up now, those types of things. Is it a waste of time? So I know other guys can probably relate to that, but there's also, we all have that massive fear of failure as well. And it's not just failure in sort of terms of jobs, it's failure in terms of relationships, fear of failure around being I haven't got kids yet, and I've got this, I'm now doubting whether I will have them, and doubting whether I'm too old to have them, or I'm single as well, so doubting whether I will find the one and settle down. It's a daily occurrence, really.
So Mark's just made a comment here, and he says, I always struggle with belonging in groups of men versus individually. Never felt comfortable with the traditional chats of self-indulgent and trying to impress. Still struggle with that, and how to bring my authentic self to these interactions.
I remember when I was rocking and rolling with alcohol, in particular, is always trying to impress. Obviously not so much now that I'm sober, which is a good thing.
It's a relief, isn't it?
Yeah, at school as well, it was always trying to impress, because it was that low self-esteem that I used to struggle with. I used to struggle with low self-esteem and then try and replace it with high ego. Like, sometimes I didn't know if I was gas or electric.
So that's interesting, actually, that you say that, because I think a lot of people don't recognise that link about ego and self-esteem. And I think it relates to what Mark's talking about there, is that, you know, in these groups of people, and I struggle with that as well, where there's a lot of ego and trying to kind of be something, trying to prove. That kind of, you know, self-indulgent banter kind of stuff, it can be really challenging. And I think, you know, when you're challenged with that stuff, it's showing that you're coming from a place, or trying to come from a place of authenticity. And it's good to recognize that, you know, that's a challenge. You wouldn't feel out of place if you were doing that ego stuff. Do you know what I mean? So I think it's a positive thing, you know?
Yeah, the low self-esteem, I guess, is a byproduct of the self-doubt. I can get that on pod, like, I get invited onto podcasts and stuff, and I listen to like the Joe Rogan podcast a lot when I'm running, and obviously Joe has all of these really intellectual guests who are able to articulate their points. He has all these long-winded debates and stuff like that, and I'm like, someone invites me on their podcast, I'm like, oh no, like, I just don't feel worthy of being on there sometimes. Self-doubt. And
that's another reason why I see self-doubt as a positive thing, actually. And that's I see self-doubt as a positive thing, because actually, even though it's not a nice experience, is that when we really examine that self-doubt, it brings to light that stuff.
Yeah.
And as a coach, that's the area I like to work in. You know, okay, yeah, let's get down to that nitty-gritty. Let's get down to these limiting beliefs and these places you believe you're not good enough. Because actually, you know, it's usually about social conditioning and, you know, stuff that you've been left with from childhood, traumas, all that kind of stuff, that we can actually, once it's there, we can work with it. You know, we can bring it out to the light, and I feel that's a positive thing, you know.
And definitely so many people are carrying around trauma from their childhood as well.
Trauma's a really interesting subject.
And I also think my trauma is trapped as well in my body. I don't believe it's just a psychological thing. I think it's it's trapped and it can get trapped. And I'm always looking sort of ways to get it out. But yeah.
Well, I think that's what trauma is essentially. I've been learning a lot about trauma just recently, actually, and it's just a fascinating subject to understand about how we embody trauma and about how the response that we take through life, and essentially it's the survival response that we take into life, which is a lot of the stuff we're talking about here, you know, our survival, our defences, right? And of course, trauma is in the body because it's not essentially a conscious memory. But the survival response is about protecting that unconscious side of us, you know. So it's fascinating. But actually, you know, what when you kind of learn to deal with that is and connect with your real power as a human being, your real human spirit, it's like you don't need. There's nothing that needs protecting there.
Yeah.
That doesn't need protecting. That doesn't need defending because it's like because it's true and it's authentic and it's you know it's actually quite gentle and you know I just love that. Yeah.
Yeah, no, it's a topic that I'm interested in as well.
Oh, fascinating, yeah. Now, Mark just made a comment here. So my natural position, as Olivia and I have discussed, was to be an observer and not participate, but that often turns into one getting to know my authentic self and harder to make true connections.
Yeah, I think, yeah, like, if you struggle with self-doubt, it just ends up keeping you in that neutral zone between success and failure.
Yeah, yeah.
I think... I spend my whole life trying to be courageous as much as possible. And I think courage isn't the absence of fear, but it's just having that fear and trying things anyway.
Yeah. So, and the way I see that is that if your self-doubt is a byproduct of living courageously, and some of us living courageously is getting up and going out every day.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah. You know, we have different levels of where we've come from. And you know, and often it is about desires. And, you know, Mark's talking about the, you know, harder to make true connections. And that's because true connection is important, you know.
But human connection is it's paramount to survival.
But if you weren't doubting yourself about making true connections and you weren't struggling with that, it wouldn't be important to you. Do you know what I mean? But it is important. It's really important to human beings. Like you say, we all have that.
Yeah, and I think self-doubt is important as well. If you didn't have self-doubt, you'd have no control, would you? So,
Well, yeah, that's one of my opinions. It can be a great limiter. And I think there's a lot of wisdom in doubt. So, but for me, it's just about learning to navigate that space and be in that zone of uncertainty, which is interesting because I think that relates to your concept around mental fitness, what you're talking about there.
Emotional fitness, yeah.
Emotional fitness, yeah, sorry, yeah.
Yeah. No, definitely. And, uncertainty. And it's about trying to just embrace that uncertainty, isn't it? And I really like the work of Dr. Stephen Peters, who talks about he's the famous psychologist who works with all of the famous sports stars.
I've not heard of him.
Johnny Wilkinson, Ronnie O'Sullivan, a lot of the footballers and stuff like that. And yeah. He's the author of the book The Chimp Paradox.
Oh, yeah, I've heard of that, yeah.
Yeah, we've all got this self-sabotaging chimp that's in our head who likes to come out any time that we're trying to make a decision or do something good with our lives or whatever, and then he comes out and feeds on your self-doubt and telling you you're not good enough, you're not going to be able to do this, people are going to laugh at you, you're going to miss the shot, you're going to miss the run and that sort of stuff. And then we don't end up doing these things because the chimp always wins. So it's learning how to put that chimp back in the cage and embrace the uncertainty and living life. And I've obviously been trying to do that a lot since I've come into sort of recovery. And I mean, like the couple of the ultra runs that I did, I've never run a marathon in my life. And I decided I was going to run 600 kilometers through the Himalayan mountains of Nepal, which was my first ultra run. And
that's amazing. So you never run a marathon, you get 600 kilometers.
Yeah, that was a challenge. I put it out there on Facebook. I raised almost $100,000 in $100,000 in money.
Wow.
And then I left Kathmandu on the first day and I was like, I've got no idea how I'm going to finish this. And 17 days later, I finished it.
Wow, that's incredible.
Yeah, but had I listened to the chimp in my head, I wouldn't have done it. And I wouldn't have raised that money and I wouldn't have changed those lives and stuff like that.
So what did you do with the chimp in your head to get over that?
The chimp always makes it, like, it always like makes the worst case scenario, right? That you're not going to do it, that everybody's going to laugh at you, people are going to think you're a joke, this, that, the other. So then it's about challenging those faults. So I kind of said to myself, okay, so if, for instance, I knew 600 kilometers was the distance, I thought to myself, well, if I can't run a marathon every day, I can walk a marathon every day. And if I do get injured, then people are going to understand that it was an injury.
Yeah.
You know, if I don't complete it, the majority of people are not going to ask for the money back. They're still going to donate it.
Yeah.
And so it's all about, I guess, it's pretty similar to like CBT in psychology. It's about sort of, like, sometimes we take things in life too seriously and we think that it's going to be a catastrophe. If we, like, for instance, if you go up to a girl who you see this attractive girl and you think, oh yeah, she's really, really nice, I'd like to go and speak to her. Most guys won't go up and speak to her. Yeah, they just won't do it. Like, what is the worst, like, your chimp will go, Don't go. She's going to laugh at you. She's going to think you're a weirdo. Don't go. What's the worst that's going to happen? You're going to go up to her and you're going to strike a conversation up with her and she's going to go, sorry, I'm not interested. You know, it's not the end of the world.
Yeah.
If you do go up to her and have a nice conversation with her, who knows? It might spark something and you might end up marrying this girl, you know? It's like, yeah.
Let me give you a female perspective on this, actually. Might be quite interesting. Obviously, I'm a happily married woman now, so this kind of stuff isn't a challenge for me nowadays. But so a while ago, you know, maybe 10 years ago or so, I did, you know, longer than that, actually, been married 10 years. There was a few sniffing around, yeah. You know. And it was, men never seemed to do that. Mm. Come right out. It always seemed to be some kind of back door into, like, communication, like, oh, I'll get your number because... Well, in AA, you used to do, let me get your number so you can come and do a chair for me. Like,
yeah.
You knew it always leads to something. And the time, there was one guy, he said, he rang me up and he said, oh, you want to meet for coffee or something like that? And he said, no, I mean it on a date. And I was like, oh. And actually, I didn't really want a date with him, but I was able to say, look, no, I don't see you like that. But I really respected him for saying it.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? And it really meant a lot to me that he actually said that. I thought, wow, that's brilliant.
But yeah, it's even hard now. I find it hard to have conversations with people. It's like people are just head down on their phone all of the time.
Yeah.
Like you walk through the street in London and you want to weird someone out, just smile at them, you know?
The challenges of the modern world. I'm glad I'm not single in the modern world, let me tell you. Well, I did meet my husband online.
Okay, cool.
Yeah.
I'm not a massive fan of online dating.
No, I wasn't, but yeah. We managed it.
That's the way of the world these days.
Yeah. Anyway, off topic a little bit, but I just thought I'd give you the female perspective on that in case anybody needs to hear that, you know? It's like, you know, go and ask her out. Even if she says no, she'll respect you for it.
Yeah, exactly. But...
yeah, and the other way around as well. Women for men.
We'll come back to the original point.
Yeah.
You're trying to self-sabotage that and it'll make it the worst case scenario. Oh, she's going to slap you, or she's going to just feed you the worst case, a bit like OCD, really, it feeds you the worst case scenario.
Yeah, so it sounded like a process of negotiation with your chimp. And so, but what I'm hearing, by the way you're doing it, so what I often think the challenge is around self-doubt is that we have these negative judgmental thoughts that are designed to keep us stuck or safe, essentially.
Yeah.
And we try to overcome those with negativity and judgment.
Yeah.
So we give ourselves a hard time for having those thoughts. I shouldn't be feeling like this. I should be better than this. Why I'm, you know, this old, I should be, you know, I should be further along than this. So we have all these expectations. So we do it with negativity and judgment. And then it's like, no wonder we, you know, don't do anything. So the point about my work essentially is about meeting ourselves with compassion.
Yeah.
And, you know, I have been looking in to a lot more. I mean, it sounds a bit cliche, I suppose, when I talk about like the feminine energy and a feminine approach, but it is much more that kind of that gentle way about approaching life. And it's been really important for me, because I said, as I was younger and had challenges with emotions myself, I did sort of that masculine thing of shutting down. So I've always said that my recovery has been getting in touch with my feminine side. But, you know, this has been really important. And I feel that, you know, so it's approaching with compassion and gentleness and realizing that, you know, we don't need to beat ourselves up, really, you know?
Yeah.
It feels so important.
For me, it's like, know that you are capable as well.
It's
a big thing. We're all capable of achieving so much more than we sort of can imagine or fathom, really. And
that's the truth, isn't it?
Yeah, like for sure. Like once I did the first run, I knew that like I learned so much about myself doing that run, and I would have never thought I'd been able to do that before I set off. So yeah, knowing that you're capable is really important. I think it's really important as well to remain humble and remain teachable, and put a bit of work in as well. Everything like this comes with action as well.
And yeah, I think that's part of the challenge, really, is that, you know, it does take, if you want to do a big challenge like that, if you want to do something big and important and meaningful like that, it's going to take a lot of work. It's going to be hard work.
Yeah, you know? But even if it's something like you know that you struggle in social situations, then like the action is to put yourself in social situations, because you'll naturally avoid them if you struggle with them.
Mind you, I can't talk of that because I'm always at I haven't come out of lockdown yet.
Oh, really?
Well, I've been in lockdown since about 2013, actually, so it's a way of life for me. So we've got three men on, actually, and so if anybody, Mark's given us a couple of comments already, thanks, Mark, but if anybody wants to come on and ask a question or make a contribution or, you know, tell us what it's like from your perspective, self-doubt from another male perspective, then you're very welcome to do that. No pressure if you're you know, here listening with one ear and doing something else, that's absolutely fine as well. But, you know, yeah, so Mark's there. Hey, Mark. Good to see you.
Good morning.
Hey, Mark.
Hello. Thank you for having me. This is my first full doubter, so that's great.
Yeah,
but,
welcome.
You know, we talked about coaching, and, you know, I was really impressed and interested in the whole concept of doubting, which led to Olivia and I connecting. And it's interesting when we talk about this idea of self-doubt and where that comes from, and ego and that. And, you know, Olivia and I chatted where ego has never been an issue for me. I'm quite comfortable in my abilities, and I'm quite comfortable in reflecting on my challenges, where I'm not as strong. And so it's been interesting that the doubt that I have comes in this idea and sense of belonging, is that, is my authentic self, who I'm comfortable with, going to be accepted in those groups and things that we perceive through social media and, you know, just the whole masculine culture and that. And so I do a lot of traditional masculine things. I'm involved in the sport and recreation world. I watch sports. I like video games and aggressive stuff. You know, I used to watch wrestling as a kid, you know, all those things. But I watched them in a different way, or I felt that I watched them in a different way than other males and other boys and things like that. And so, you know, this idea of doubt comes from that struggle of belonging, saying, you know, are my ideas and the way I am, which I don't want to change, going to fit into the society. And so I think that concept of fitting in is a challenging one, because does that mean to fit in, I need to change who I think I am or who I want to be? And so, you know, very much now in, you know, my later years, I've been comfortable with that. But then there comes a sense of a bit of loneliness from that, to saying, am I creating these authentic connections? And am I being too harsh on other individuals, especially males? I realize that I don't have a lot of male close friends where we connect and create. Even, you know, some of the chats Olivia and I had about was creating, sorry about that.
Lost your video for a second.
My phone was ringing. And was this idea of how do I create this connection with another dad that I just met, who we just sat down and started talking and so it was almost like dating with a male. I'm happily married. I have children, but it was like, okay, am I dating? You know, oh, and then he's not calling back, or he didn't respond to my text. And so again, it comes down to this idea of where do we belong? And that self-doubt actually has led to my calling now of saying, hey, I'm still struggling to find a place to belong. And, you know, Olivia did a great job of pointing out, maybe that's my purpose. That's, you know, to help others belong. And I was able to reflect on that and say, oh, yeah, you know, I do. I have done that my whole career in different roles in different ways. But that self-doubt has led to saying, well, embrace the doubt and understand that there's so many out there that also have the same challenges of doubt. And if we can be the ones to facilitate that for others, or help just shine a spotlight on it and saying that it's okay. So that's been really powerful for me. So I really appreciate this conversation too, and that authenticity that's coming through. And I find that I'm being drawn more and understanding that there are more authentic people out there that are really willing to share their stories. And I don't like the idea of saying not put yourself out there, but understanding the importance of sharing that lived experience, because it becomes powerful. And though you may not get, I used to say this when I worked with student staff, saying, you know, when they wanted thank yous, and saying, well, you know what, how often do you actually say thank you to the people out there that are saying things? And, you know, if you went to class and your professor gave you, you know, a great class lecture, you don't go up to them and go, oh, thank you very much. So, you know, that idea of sharing your lived experience has such a larger impact and connection than most people even know, because we don't hear those thank you. And so I thank both of you, and I appreciate again that authenticity, because I feel that the more that people hear and see that being authentic is okay, then we're going to have these larger ideas of belonging and creating that sense of belonging through our interactions and relationships.
Definitely.
Lovely. I'd love to hear what you've got to say about what Mark's said there, Dan.
Mark mentioned social media, and I think because obviously there's a lot of good stuff about social media, but there's a hell of a lot of bad stuff as well. And we spoke on that event where your friend recommended me. We spoke a lot about social media and how it leads to comparison with regards to self-doubt. You look at social media, for instance, and I will look at social media and I'll see all of these pictures of happy couples. And this happened with a friend of mine. I know a friend of mine is at war with his partner. They're arguing all day, every day. And it's getting to a point where it's quite a toxic relationship.
I'm not laughing at that. I'm laughing because I know what you're going to say on social media.
they posted a picture of having a meal together and we're the happiest couple in the world. And I was like, It's not authentic. That's not real. That's unfair. So, when Mark mentioned about social media, is that we look at these guys on social media and they're all ripped and they're all doing this and they're all doing this man thing, and it's just not reality, you know.
Yeah. It's quite damaging. It can be quite damaging, can't it?
Yeah, for sure. And I think if you are talking about, I guess, dads meeting other dads, for instance. I know a lot of my friends struggle when they meet other dads from their school, their kids' school, because they're not actually friends with these dads and they're meeting them for the first time and they're in this social situation, pretty similar to what Mark was explaining. And they say to us, like when they're with their actual mates, like, yeah, I really, really struggle with that. And I say, I'm like, yeah, just be yourself. Tell them something true about yourself instead of trying to compete with one another.
Yeah.
And like I'm always laying it down on the line that, yeah, I'm a men's mental health advocate. And it just starts a conversation there and then. You find out, like, you get to know someone really, really quickly then that they've actually struggled with something themselves. And then find that the key to building like new relationships is to get yourself vulnerable and show something real and raw about yourself, and it speeds it up a lot better than trying to say to them like win them over with your sports knowledge or your bank balance or what car you drive or whatever, which is typical of like alpha males when they get together, you know,
which nobody's really interested in.
No, because it's all bollocks, isn't it?
What I love about what Mark was saying there, well, first of all, what I love is just having these conversations with anybody, but particularly men. And I, you know, want to commend you, if that's the right word, for coming on here and talking about that, and for Mark coming on and sharing, you know, deep stuff, actually, because it's a big deal. And, you know,
the more men that do it, the quicker we can change the conversation.
Absolutely. And that's really what Mark's saying. It's about being that beacon and about having that courage to talk authentically about this is my challenge. And what Mark's talking about there is saying, well, you know, he's a confident man, you know, in day to day life, he doesn't have a problem with that kind of stuff, but it's about finding this sense of belonging that's challenging. And that, as we talked about earlier, is that such a basic human need and desire. And in a way that makes us vulnerable, you know, because, when we start to compromise our values for that sense of belonging in a group, like, oh, I have to be like this, or I have to think like this in order to belong in this group. And that's, I think that's the challenge here, is about being able to maintain that sense of authenticity, even when it does make you feel like an outsider, even when you do feel lonely and alone, but you're maintaining your sense of self. Now that's the challenge, because, you know, yeah, you end up being an outsider, but then the other side of that is what Mark's saying, is about how he puts this into his work. And he's doing some great work around, you know, helping people to belong in recreation. So just,
yeah, brilliant.
Fantastic to be a part of that, you know, and I totally applaud that. But then about standing up and saying, yeah, this is my challenge, you know, this is how I feel. And in doing that, that's how you make connection with people, because other people guaranteed will come to you and say, I feel like that too.
Yeah, exactly. It's just like, I really struggle with these kind of situations, and never, yeah. But yeah, I'm struggling too.
Yeah.
A great icebreaker. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And in a way, you know, so we're part of the 12 Step Fellowships, which is based upon that, isn't it? And I always feel really quite fortunate to be a member of that, even though I don't go to that many meetings nowadays, but, you know, to have had that, because you walk in and you've got that instant connection, which is based upon like kind of deep stuff, isn't it?
Yeah, really deep stuff.
There's very rarely any small talk in one of these meetings. Great. So we're coming up to time now, Dan. And, you know, thank you for coming today. Is there anything that you wanted to say just to finish off? Is there anything?
Yeah, no, not really, but just any... well, doesn't matter, male or female, just get connected with me on Instagram and follow my account. It's all lifestyle based, so it's all stuff that we can all do to improve our emotional fitness and the way that we do life, so that we can ultimately achieve more. So please get connected with me.
Yeah, and even more important in these challenging times, I think, you know, to be doing this stuff, the emotional fitness. And so I'll put some links to your stuff in the recording that I'll send out tomorrow. And so, and you've got the brain upgrade challenge coming on, which I love the sound of that. You know, I look at self-doubt as a brain upgrade, because that's really, it's tolerance, increasing our tolerance to that discomfort, you know, is a,
I've got to do the final legal bits with it, and then it should be ready to go.
Good stuff.
Again, I'll be promoting that on Instagram, so
great, we'll look out for that. Great, well, thanks so much for joining us today.
Welcome. I'll leave you guys to it now, but yeah, it was lovely to
are you gonna shoot off?
Oh, do you need me to?
No, just hang around for a little bit. We're going to close off the recording if anybody else wants to come on. I think.
Okay, cool. No problem.
Yeah. So I'll just say that. So just next week, I've got another man coming along. I've got Nathan Blair coming on. Jay knows who he is. And he's a founder of the Somatic School of Coaching. So we're going to talk about tuning in and trusting the wisdom of your body. Which we talked a little bit about how trauma is stored in the body. So
Yeah, wow, that'd be cool.
Yeah, so that'd be cool. Yeah, feel free to come along and join us if you want to. Same link. But Nathan's going to be here next week. So thank you for the people who joined us live. Thank you to everyone who's watched the recording. Thanks again, Dan, and I'll see you next week.
Bye.